from Four Stripes. This is the Rolling Thunder Show. Hey guys, this is your host, Philip Wong, aka Rolling Thunder. Each episode, we'll talk to different jiu-jitsu practitioners from all over Asia, from white belts to black belts, on various topics like gym cultures, etiquettes, recent news, juicy stories, and much, much more. Hope you guys enjoy the show. Today, my guest is Henry Chan, the owner of Gracie Baja Hong Kong, a jiu-jitsu black belt and one of the pioneers of jiu-jitsu in Hong Kong. We'll be discussing a little bit of history and gym cultures in Hong Kong with special guest, Gus Liam. Enjoy. So our second episode here, we have Gus Liam as our guest, and we have Professor Henry Chan from Gracie Baja Hong Kong.
Hi.
Yes. Hey. So great to welcome, be here, guys. So we're going to get right to it. Actually, let's do an introduction of Professor Henry first. So how long have you done jiu-jitsu, Professor?
I couldn't remember. Maybe 17, 16 years.
16 years. How did you start? How did you start jiu-jitsu?
I started because I injured myself in rugby.
Okay.
And I could do not anything. And then some people introduced me to UFC 3.
Okay.
And I watched this karate guy, which I was a big fan of mine.
Yeah.
He got beaten up by Hoyler.
Oh.
Right. So I thought, okay, this is something I want to do.
Okay. Oh, and you did karate for many years.
Yeah. I was a great follower of Daido Juku.
Okay.
A style of mixed martial art with gi. Okay. I always have been a big fan of them, and I myself graded to second dan.
Okay. Oh wow.
Yeah. So to me that was awesome to see one of my fan, you know, biggest belief in full contact karate and got owned.
Oh.
And I think after that, Daido Juku has changed a lot because of that fight. Honestly. That's how I felt. Maybe the Japanese wouldn't totally agree with me, but I can see the evolution of Daido Juku. And now it's known as Kudo.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. You still teach karate in your gym, right?
I restarted. I stopped.
Okay.
And a very good friend of mine and yours also, Hoin.
Oh, yes. Oh.
he encouraged me to restart karate because I think all these years I do so much jiu-jitsu, my body feel a bit tired.
Yeah.
And he said, why don't you do something different? Different muscle part, different movement, and see if that helps.
Okay.
Because I don't like going to the gym. I don't like going to see the physio. I don't like going to see the doctor. And I just like to train on the mat.
Very old school.
Oh, yeah.
That's good. That's good.
What do you expect from a 57-year-old guy?
57. How old are you, Gus?
54.
Yes. You know, Gus, Gus has, you know, he always say he likes to be the oldest guy in our gym.
Yeah. So now I'm not happy Henry's older than me.
So, well, for guys, we're going to get into our first topic here. A lot of people, you know, like in basketball, they talk about the GOAT. You know, MMA, they talk about the GOAT, greatest of all time. Who is your greatest of all time, guys?
In jiu-jitsu?
In jiu-jitsu.
Jiu-jitsu with a gi. Or gi, no gi. Well, I guess it would have to be Hodger Gracie. I think he's clearly the best. Yeah. If you count gi and no gi.
How about you?
I would say Marcelo.
Marcelo Garcia.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But I should say Eduardo Tellez because he really
revolutionized the game.
He really introduced me to jiu-jitsu.
Okay. You know, my opinion, I love Marcelo Garcia. Okay. I like his game. I think that's I love his game. But I think Hodger Gracie is the greatest ever because, you know, he won 10, I think, 10 championship in IBJJF. He won ADCC, and he has the highest submission rate. He finished almost everybody. And he beat the best of the best, right? I mean, a couple of years ago, they have Bushesha and him.
Yep.
He beat him.
That was amazing, yeah.
Yeah, many people can debate the first fight was, you know.
Yeah, it looked like Bushesha maybe got the better of him the first fight, but the second fight was definitive.
Yeah. And now, you know, the reason we're bringing this up, because a lot of people are asking, Gordon Ryan or Hodger Gracie? I still think Hodger Gracie. Many people might disagree with me. I can see Professor Henry's face. <He's> Go ahead.
To me, Hodger is, his size is a little bit, it's just way too different from me. You know, so when I watch Professor fighting, and I really want to be able to follow his game and try to be, adapt his game to be one of my game. And Hodger, to me, it just always not seems to be the size that I want to.
But do you follow. Think the greatest jiu-jitsu practitioner of all time?
Not your favorite. Who's
the
greatest?
The greatest to the sport, like the Michael Jordan. If you know, I consider LeBron James to be the greatest, but many people say Michael Jordan.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, do you think Hodger Gracie is the greatest ever step on the mat?
I suppose what he accomplished in competition, yes.
Gus?
Yeah, I think Hodger. I think Gordon Ryan is the greatest in no gi. But in gi, he's, you know.
Who do you think will win in the fight? Gordon Ryan or Hodger Gracie? Let's say in no gi.
That's different. They're different.
That's MMA, right?
No gi.
Oh, so that's a close question.
That's a close question? Who do you think, though?
I don't know. Maybe I would have to bet on Gordon.
Same me.
Really? I still go with Hodger.
Yeah, I hate to bet against Hodger because he might still win, honestly. But if I had a bet, you know, maybe I would have to go with Gordon.
You think so? You don't think Hodger can adapt to the late game?
I think he totally can, but Gordon is totally evolved, though. So
yeah, but he just Gordon basically just a no gi guy. You know,
so. Yeah,
yeah.
So Hodger is a gi guy, and he had to adapt to no gi. So in my opinion, so. I still believe the guy that's trained like most of his lifetime in no gi should win.
Okay.
Because they're different. I mean, gi and no gi is different. I mean, I started off a little bit of no gi.
Yeah.
And then when I find, now as I met a proper BJJ black belt, and I never take off my gi again for almost like, I don't know, 7-8 years.
Yeah.
And I never trained with no gi. And I always thought BJJ is with gi.
Mm.
So, I mean, obviously nowadays, like, because of the evolution of the game, no gi become
more prominent.
Should I say that? Should I say that? I think I should have to agree with Gus. But to me, jiu-jitsu is still with BJJ is gi.
You prefer gi over no gi?
Definitely.
How about you, Gus?
I do, but I also train no gi.
Yeah.
I don't train no gi.
Oh, I train both. Wow, no gi only once. Yeah, I like the gi, but I also like the no gi for the fact that, you know, it's more like gi is more control.
Mm.
No gi is slippery. You have to scramble a lot.
Yeah.
And no gi, I like it because it seems like it brings out the aggression in me more than gi. Gi is more like, you know, you have that discipline of, you know, step by step. No gi, sometimes the step by step don't work because it's slippery.
Yeah, it's true.
But I agree with you, but that's one of the reasons I like no gi. I feel like no gi game helps my gi game. Like I actually use the same game, gi or no gi. I like the over under pressure pass, and it's much harder no gi, right? But then I've got to be really precise, and that carries over to my gi game too. I feel like they help each other. There are a lot of things you can't do no gi, a lot of grips you can't have. True. Right, so then you have to rely more on weight and, you know, balance and stuff like that.
Okay, but that brings up the question is, you know, I know, I only train in the morning in Kowloon, so I don't know the nighttime guys. But I know a lot of guys that, you know, they watch Gordon Ryan, they watch all these, you know, what do they call again, the John Dennehan squad, the Death Squad. Yeah.
Yeah.
Everybody's trying to do the footlock. Even white belts are attempting footlocks.
Yeah.
So how about in your gym, Henry? Do you let them do footlocks or do you...
Yes, I do. Because of the MMA background of the gym, we have guys that they go to shoot toe to compete.
Yeah.
And you just have to learn footlocks. And you should learn footlocks. I mean, it's part of the game.
Yeah.
I mean, I will show them all the footlocks. I will even show them heel hooks.
Okay.
And I will just tell them, be careful to your partner. Okay. And I will emphasize to the people, if you want to compete, make sure you adapt to the to the regulations. Okay. But you shouldn't abandon a technique because it's not legal or illegal. It's technique is a technique, and you should learn them all. And I disbelieve that no footlock for certain bouts. You should learn it as you progress, and you just learn all the techniques, learn how you feel, and learn how to escape, learn how to protect yourself. I think that's very important of the game.
Yeah. So, you know, our previous episode, we were talking about, you know, white belt starting in the gym. You know, nowadays, you know, jiu-jitsu, a lot of people go on YouTube before they join the class. So they come in, the first thing they do, they try a footlock. Do you let a new white belt do a footlock when they first come in? How do you, let me rephrase my question, is how do you deal with the new white belts coming to the gym? Like a new guy coming to the gym, you see him, you know, nowadays, because of YouTube, everybody watch YouTube maybe before they go to a class, and they come in, they haven't done jiu-jitsu before or grappling. They just watch this YouTube, they go, hey man, that looks cool. Looks like I can do it. They come to the gym, now they have a guy they can do it to. Do you stop them right away, or do you let them just carry on?
I actually, for new guys that come into my gym and try their first class, I never let them roll.
Oh.
If they want to try, I just say, next time.
Okay.
I won't let them roll in the beginning. Maybe the first couple of weeks, actually, they have no rolling at all. Even if they want to roll, I would stop them. Say no.
Okay.
And later, if they want to roll, they can only roll with higher belt.
Okay.
I don't let a white belt roll with a, like a new fresh white belt, I don't let him roll with a white belt, not even a blue belt.
Oh, okay.
Right. I would just let them roll with purple and above.
Okay.
And that is very straight in my house.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's a different than our gym, but that's a good, you know, that's a good thing. But how do you, now as a white belt, our previous episode, we were just going over as talking about as a white belt, when they come in, they're going to get killed, especially with a higher belt. They're going to get tapped out a lot. How do you keep them coming? How do you, as a professor, you know, for Gus and I, we, you know, at Kowloon, as you know, we're quite open. Every day maybe have a different instructor or somebody just sharing. While in, you know, Professor Henry's gym, he is there all the time. How do you keep them as a white belt? You know, white belt is like the, you know, that's where most of the business comes from. Most of the people coming in are white belts. How do you keep them? Like, how do you?
I never think about keeping them.
Okay.
Right. If they want to come back, they will come back. Okay. So I would not try to adapt the class to suit a new white belt. So if I'm planning to do something that night, if a fresh white belt come in, he will just go through the same routine exercise that we do all the time, which we do almost every day. And I will show them the position. And a lot of the position from lower belt, you have to learn all the way to the higher belts. Now, we are not going to show any really fancy stuff during a group class because you cannot. And basically, I would try to introduce them to jiu-jitsu to understand why is it so interesting. It's because of the mechanics, the understanding of the human mechanism is just an amazing art. And it's a martial art. So I will show them the art side of the technique and let them feel, wow, I want to come back.
Okay. How about Gus?
The question is, how do I? I mean, I think Henry had a really good answer.
Yeah, how about you? As a white belt, you know, I know sometimes you teach at Kowloon.
Yeah.
Yeah, as a white belt.
How do I? I think you try to be a good example. You try to be ego-free. I try to just share, not try to be a teacher. And try to inspire people by how much I love it, I guess. You know, I also try to keep it simple, the fundamentals. Yeah, I mean, I think it's a good rule for, like, new white belts to roll with higher-level belts. I try to do that also, just for safety. Although I let them roll, but either I'll roll with them myself or another high-level person. Yeah, I mean, and I agree with Henry. Like, some people love it. A lot of people won't, right?
Yeah.
But you just try to show what it is in your teaching and the way you approach it, and then the right people will stay.
Yeah. I just suddenly thought of something.
Yeah.
Because, you know, just a little background on Professor Henry. He was actually the coach for Unbeatable, right? The movie. Nick Jung and
Pan Yu'an.
Pan Yu'an, yes. How were they?
I would say Zhang Gafai is more of an actor, and I think Pan Yu'an is he's really enjoyed doing jiu-jitsu.
Okay.
And even after the film, he still come back to do jiu-jitsu with me.
How was his jiu-jitsu?
It's good for a movie.
Okay.
But that's stop there. Yeah.
Yeah.
But he still come back and learn all the techniques, you know, just to keep himself up to date, because he do a lot of action.
Yeah.
And I think nowadays a lot of the movies do require the skill of jiu-jitsu in the action.
Yes.
So I think he actually want to be just keep up with that. Okay. And I think he actually like jiu-jitsu.
That's good.
Yes.
But after the movie, were there more students coming to your gym? Because after they watched the movie, you know, sometimes they have like MMA movies and then everybody watch it. They start going to the jiu-jitsu gym because that's the thing they can find, right? Sometimes in Kowloon, you know, I through my years training in Kowloon, there's sometimes some movies, some fighting movies, they see a move, people come.
Actually, it's less Unbeatable. It's more after Sat Po Long.
Sat Po Long is... SPL 2, I guess you're talking about, maybe?
Yeah.
With Wu Jing and Don Yen?
Don Yen, yeah. I got guys coming in and just say, I want to learn flying number. The first thing is that they come in and ask, Sifu, do you teach flying number? And I've told them, I don't know how to do flying number.
I never done a flying number. Nobody will let me drill on them.
You know, I said, if you want to do flying armbar, just go somewhere else. Here we don't show flying armbar. I show you armbar from close guard.
Yeah. Have you ever done a flying armbar, guys?
No.
I never done.
I've done like a half, like a kind of a falling armbar. You know, you put your foot on their body and then kind of fall back. Yeah. But I think it's risky for myself, you know.
Yeah. I think so. You can fall on your head easily.
Yeah, you can.
Professor Daniels taught us flying armbar.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And we did practice a little bit, and after it's just like, no, we just pull guard and do armbar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
More realistic, right?
Why do you want to do a flying armbar?
Yeah.
When I can just pull guard and do armbar.
Yes.
It's efficiency of jiu-jitsu, right? I mean,
it is.
You take the shortest route and the easiest way to tap the guy.
Yeah.
I don't spend my energy jump up to catch the guy. That's my opinion.
It's more like a movie technique. Yeah. Although it works. You can catch people in it, of course, right?
But it looks good for movies.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think, you know, the Japanese play a big part of this flying armbar because of Rumine Sato.
Oh, yeah.
Mm.
Remember that flying armbar he pulled out in Shuto was amazing.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. And I think actually that's he also played a big part in introducing jiu-jitsu.
Yes.
And in the early days when Romina Sato competed in ADCC, he was amazing.
Yeah.
You know, our next topic here, I want to discuss is how do we, you know, Hong Kong has many martial arts schools. You have, you know, karate schools, you have judo schools, you have taekwondo schools. And, you know, people in the BJJ community, you know, they want to grow BJJ. And I always say the most successful martial arts in Hong Kong, I think, around the world, I think it's Taekwondo. I think they did the best marketing because they have so many kids. Every kid is learning. Now, yes, I know people say that Taekwondo doesn't work. Taekwondo, they have so many teachers. But guess what? They have the most majority of people. And I think it's successful for them. But how do you think jiu-jitsu can grow? More kids' classes? Or should we, you know, like... Because to be a black belt in jiu-jitsu, it takes a long time. You know, in taekwondo, I think it's like 3 or 4 years you can be a black belt. They can be an instructor.
Fair. Let me stop you there. Yeah. It's different. I mean, I got 5 black belts.
Yeah.
And the one that I most treasure is jiu-jitsu. It's because it's so hard to get. It's so hard. It is so hard. I cannot tell you how much sweat, how much blood, how much time I spend on the mat to get there.
Yeah.
It's Nothing can replace that. Nothing.
Yes.
You know, so I'm not going to compare. It cannot. It's a martial art that it cannot be compared, right? And I'm happy that it stay the way it is.
Okay.
And it is my personal feeling and belief as I run the school, I will keep the way it is.
Okay.
Yeah, I like how jiu-jitsu is. Taekwondo, I think they have a lot of kids. They make a lot of money. Yeah. I think not so many adults. Right. So it's more like a sport. So the kids and then some of the elite kids go on to compete in whatever, in the Olympics and whatever. One of the many things I love about jiu-jitsu is that it's all ages on the mat.
True.
You know, I've been training with my son since he was, 10 or something like that, right? So it's really all ages on the mat, all training together. It's still a very living thing. Everyone's developing their game now. Whereas in other sports, including, especially taekwondo, but even including other things like wrestling, which I also love, like the older people kind of, it's not, their game is not important. They're what's important is that they coach younger kids, right? And coaching is cool. I like coaching. But also, our game is important. Everyone's game is important, no matter how old you are, right? It's a different thing. And if you adapted the taekwondo, which obviously they're very successful, I think it would change the whole thing. We're all helping each other in jiu-jitsu. Everybody's both a coach and a competitor, if they want to be. You know what I mean? Their game is important also.
You know, I had this idea before. Okay. Don't judge me. you know, the Muay Thai, the Thai boxing, they do, you know, in the gym, they're doing these 1-2 jab as an exercise. Do you think jiu-jitsu can do the same? Can do like maybe just movement?
Like drilling?
Yeah, just drilling.
We have some of that, right? Yeah.
But like actually like commercializing.
Oh.
Do you think it will work?
No. I don't like it.
I don't like it. Yeah. I mean, we got students that they don't compete and they don't enjoy the competition part of it. And in fact, a lot of the guys that come into my gym is because I never emphasize in the competition part of it. So mostly they just drill and some of them don't even really roll.
Okay.
But because if they don't roll, they're always blue belt.
Okay.
So some of them have been blue belt, I don't know how many years, and I've lost count and they don't care about what belt they are. They just want to come in, good sweat, drill, and enjoy their time, and we eat and drink after.
Okay.
You know, and I'm happy to keep it the way it is.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I think all people want to do it for different reasons and so.
But how do you think jiu-jitsu can grow like massive in Hong Kong? You think it will ever happen?
I think it's already growing, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think the main way is just to, individually sharing, getting new people to try it. Right? So like the more people try it, some percentage of those will love it and be part of the community forever. I mean, and it's grown a lot in Hong Kong already since I started.
So. I mean, it's still a pretty young sport. I mean, it's still young in compared to other sports. When I first started, we have like four people in the gym. Four. I mean, that's all.
Who did you start with? Actually, I never heard the story.
I started with a judo guy. And actually, I used to play rugby before. And this rugby guy I knew, he has a very good judo background. And then I started, I did judo at university, so we started together and we started to try to leg lock each other in the gym. It was so funny, and we're still talking about to date.
Okay.
And later I meet Thomas, of course, and everyone in Hong Kong would have met him.
Was Thomas the first in Hong Kong?
Yeah.
Jiu-jitsu?
I think so.
I think to my, I'm not sure if I'm 100% correct. I think Henry Ng is the first guy that actually bring jiu-jitsu to Hong Kong.
Henry Ng actually is associated with Kowloon somehow, right?
Later. Oh, I see. Right? They started.
Later. But he doesn't actually train jiu-jitsu.
He's still training jiu-jitsu.
Oh, he does. Okay.
Yeah, he's still training.
Okay. Yeah. This is in the midst of time before. Okay.
So I understand Henry Ng was he come back from Australia, he studied there. And I think when he come back here, he started an interest group. And at that time, actually, I think Taki was training together.
Okay.
And I believe Taki was still a white belt. And of course, he was a black belt in judo. I'm very good judoka. And I think later Thomas just like coming to join the group because he's the highest belt in the class. He become the coach of that small group, and it grow a little bit. And later than the Taki had Kowloon, and I think right about the same time we have a fight club.
Okay.
Right. Okay. And I've never met Taki until Copa Hong Kong won. I never met him. I heard of him, but I've never met him. I trained with Thomas on and off, and that's how we started to build together. In that time when I first started jiu-jitsu, maybe like about 20 guys.
Okay.
Maximum.
Yeah.
And I trained with Roger a lot.
Okay.
Roger and a big mentor. Roger, yeah. Big mentor of mine. I mean, Roger really, I think Roger really changes my mindset to jiu-jitsu. And then later I started to train under black belt and just fly them over from the States, you know, just train with them.
Yeah. You know, I always admire Professor Henry's gym. I've been to his gym. He always, every time I bring over, you know, before Lucas and Michelle, I always, you know, ask him. He always let me bring people to his gym. And one thing I like about his gym, different than Kowloon, I love Kowloon, obviously. Kowloon, we're more free. Everybody just go in. It's more like a little bit like you said, like an interest group. We go in, people sharing this and that. While I do like that, but I also like Professor Henry's school because his school is a lot more structured, right? You're always there. The feeling I feel when I go to his gym is, you know, you're like a dad. And everybody kind of, you know, kind of like a family. While in Kowloon, Taki, you know, he's like a big brother. We're playing around. While everybody going to Professor Henry's gym, they, you know, it's that structure, right? That, and my next topic is dating in a jiu-jitsu gym, okay? In Kowloon, there was, but there never, nothing ever successful, you know? Never two
there,
people.
There was? I don't even know.
Yeah, there was. How about in your gym? Anybody come in and they met in jiu-jitsu, man? And how do you deal with it? You know, in Kowloon, we're just so free. It really just, like Gus. Gus doesn't even know. Sometimes I don't even know. But things do happen, you know, especially now, you know, over in the U.S., there's a lot of, you know, I talked to some professors over in the U.S., they have a problem because you get girls coming in and then, hello? Yeah, you get girls coming in and there's these guys that are hounding them or, you know.
Really?
Then, yeah.
Wow. That's bad.
Yeah, it is bad, you know.
Really
but,
bad.
But it's like any interest group, right? Any interest group, some people join because they want to meet other people. And then what happens is they take the focus of jiu-jitsu away.
Whoa.
And people quit, right? So do you have that problem before? Or anybody dating in your gym?
No. Well, it's different from... What I'm saying is a little bit different from dating, right?
Yeah.
Dating is...
Yeah. You're talking about sexual harassment? Or you're talking about like asking for dates? All
asking
the time?
For dates.
Okay, so it's like a borderline.
Yeah, borderline. Right. Yeah.
Luckily, not. But I think my gym is as you said, it's pretty straight.
Yeah.
You know, so you come in, you will always like we'll bow in, and then we'll start the class, and then we'll roll, and then we'll bow out, and we'll finish. And people might hang out, but they're not going to hang around in the gym.
Okay.
So once they walk outside the gym, I don't really know. But within the mat, they're pretty okay to each other. If to be honest, if I see something that I don't like, I would talk to that person.
Okay.
Myself personally, I said you shouldn't do that. Don't even say words like that in front of a lady.
Okay, that's pretty good.
I will, and I would tell them. I would private message them and say, okay, you shouldn't do that.
Oh yeah,
right. I won't say a warning, but I would just like warmly remind him, not to cross that line because we only here to do the jiu-jitsu, and we're here to enjoy the environment of learning, and straightly there is finished. That the once they walk out of the gym, of course it's difficult to control them, but. As you said, we are like family, and they I'm a little bit a father character to them, and we do know each other quite well, even outside the gym, and and they have kept the life pretty straight and clean.
Okay, so that's
good. It's okay.
You know, I find some gyms, our gyms, you know, I talk to Gus. Gus is, you know, I talk to him all the time. We've been friends for a very long time. People get connected. And I think, you know, with other gyms I've been to overseas, they treat the professor almost like a psychologist in a way. They have problems, they have personal problems, they go and talk to them. Does that happen in your gym? Do people come up to you outside of, you know, they go to your gym, but they have some personal issues. Yeah. They treat you like a father figure.
Yeah, they do. They come to seek for my advice, and obviously you somehow in this society now, especially in Hong Kong, because of all this like different opinion and stuff, and yeah, they do come into problems. Sometimes it's problem with the family. Sometimes it's problem with the work, and they all come up to me because. To them, I seem to be very successful in running the gym.
Yeah.
I seem to be very successful to be a family as a husband and as a father.
Yeah.
And again, they think that I'm pretty successful as a business person. So they do come to me, although I'm not that successful to, in my opinion, but I would try to share, like I said, we just share experience to them as a senior of the society, I guess.
Yes.
Yeah.
You think so, Gus?
Yeah. I mean, like outside the gym, I'm friends with people outside the gym too, and you know, business stuff or
But you think some professors, you know, I met some, you know, overseas, not in Hong Kong, some uses that power to, you know, do other things. You think, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I've read about different cases, I read and that's. Yeah. Of course, that's ugly.
It is ugly. But I think in Hong Kong, it doesn't really happen as much, maybe.
I haven't seen it.
Yeah. I haven't seen any.
I don't know anything.
I never even heard of it, you know. Not talking about seeing it. I don't even...
Yeah, I haven't heard of it.
I haven't heard of it. You know, seems.
Yeah.
Hong Kong seems to be pretty straightforward, and all the professors seems to be straightforward, and... You know, they have their own students, different, we have our own way to run the gym, and like people just conveniently choose the spot to train. And actually, I do find my members move around gym to gym.
Okay.
Because sometimes it just suits the living. Like I got students that move to Kowloon and purely because it's easier to go to Kowloon.
Okay.
Right.
Now, that's another issue. Yeah. That was since you brought it up.
Yeah.
Okay, honestly, do you have a heartache when they leave your gym to go to another gym? You know, some professors, they do. You know, sometimes I see people from Kowloon. They've been training in Kowloon. I train with them. Maybe I form a connection. And then they tell me they go to another gym. I'm not tacky. But for me, myself, sometimes I feel heartbroken. I'll be honest. You know, I want to see them because, you know, we have built a connection. Especially at you. You know, Professor Henry, you're training them since they're a white belt. Maybe they go to blue or purple, and then they say, "Oh no, I'm not gonna train here anymore. I'm gonna go over here." Do you know? I know you're a nice guy. You probably say, "Okay, go." But do you inside? Do you feel like, "Oh man"?
Well, of course, I don't feel good.
Yeah.
I mean, if I tell you I feel okay, I'm just lying to you, right?
Yeah.
So obviously, if everyone comes to the gym and they've been staying with me and. I teach with my heart and my soul. Yeah. And of course, I want them to stay with me.
Yeah.
But when they leave, I will just... If they leave and if they need to leave, they will always tell me a reason why. And I will just say very simple, just go and enjoy your jiu-jitsu. Just keep going and please don't stop. And as long as you remember that you started here, it's okay.
You know, I once asked a professor and a jiu-jitsu black belt. He told me he doesn't have problems with white belts moving around. But if he promote a blue belt to a person, he felt that he felt deeper because he promoted him. Do you feel the same? Do you think so, Gus? I know we haven't promoted anybody.
Yeah, but, I haven't promoted anybody. Yeah. So,
but
I can understand why people feel sadder, you know, if somebody promoted. Yeah. But I don't think that's ever happened, except for one kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
In general, like I feel sad when people go leave because they go back to the U.S. or whatever, right? Like, yeah. But we're all apart. We're gonna train together someday in the future. Like, but still, it's sad. Yeah. You know,
but those I think different. But if they're like in Hong Kong, if they go one gym to the other gym, I feel
I don't know of any recent cases of that myself, so it's hard for me to relate.
Yeah, I feel betrayed as a teammate, but as a professor, you know, somebody tell me, I feel a little bit betrayed because they, you know, recently, you know. Somebody told me, I was asking, oh, where is this guy? They're like, oh, he left because he thinks that the other gym has better techniques that are suitable for him, more suitable for him. But for me, if you've been training in that gym for 4 to 5 years, I don't mind people cross-training, but I just think the loyalty of things that you should be going back to your home gym. Unless you have some kind of, you know, different situation.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. I mean, I never... Actually, I would actually ask myself if that person left the gym, is it something wrong with me? Is it something wrong with myself that he has to leave my gym?
Yeah.
So although I feel sad, I feel hard about that. I still ask myself, maybe I did something wrong to make him feel that he has to go away.
That's very healthy.
That's very healthy. Attitude. Yeah.
But then, I think off my head, I couldn't remember any high about that.
You know,
I've ever done that.
Yeah, I can't. I honestly can't either. Maybe you're thinking of somebody, but I don't. I can't think of.
I've been thinking of. Oh, I've been brainstorming myself, but I don't recall. I don't recall a high about that's left. Actually, they quit. I keep on asking them, just restart. You know, just keep going. And for some reason, they just quit. I mean, why you want to quit when you're a purple belt? I just couldn't.
Yeah,
I couldn't understand. I mean, it's so difficult to reach purple and then you quit.
Yeah,
I mean, why could that happen?
Now, why do most people quit? You know, I some they tell me about job, some tell me about injuries, and the most, you know, the other ones I you know, okay, is your life, but the one that I personally, I think. I can't stand as people who come back maybe a week or two. Maybe they stop for 6 months, 8 months. They come back and other people beat them and then they quit. I think they're just pussies. I'll say it again. They're just pussies. you think so, Gus?
I think so. I agree with you. Yeah. You should have a healthier ego.
Yeah. You ever had that happen? Some people happen in the gym too. They haven't show up. They come back. You know, for COVID, I was traveling around, Gus know. And then when I came back to Hong Kong, the first week, I was gassed. You know, people lower people than me, you know, they haven't trained for many years. They were passing my guard and I was gassed out. But guess what? I go home. I was like, okay, I'm going to come back because I'm not a pussy. So, you know, as a jiu-jitsu, we're all warriors. And, you know, just a skill, everybody building their skills. But a lot of people have quit. They come back after first week, second week. They're getting beat by people they used to submit. And now they can't, and then they quit. Ever happened in your gym? And I have seen so many. And, you know, I just think, you know, I don't tell them, but in my mind, I just think you're a pussy.
I mean, actually, the people who actually stay behind my gym, they are not too afraid of getting tapped. You know, you know, it's part of the game.
Yeah.
And I always, that's why you model had a big, has a big influence in my understanding towards jiu-jitsu. And because when one day he just told me, Henry, you just tap.
Yeah.
I said, I don't want to tap. Yeah. I said, everyone tap.
Yeah.
You tap to learn and you tap to be able to continue.
Yeah.
And that's what he told me. And I've been like applied to that sentence to now.
Yeah.
Everyone tap. I mean, even world champions somehow... I mean, you cannot
become a world champion without tapping thousands and
thousands. I don't mean that. I don't mean just a tap. I mean, you know, it's like, let me rephrase what I'm saying. Let's say you've been training for 3 years. And, you know, this person, you every time you train with him, you can submit him, you can tap him. And then you stop for 6 months. You come back, you're no longer able to do the same. And people get discouraged.
And let me rephrase my... Yeah. My sentence is, when you first learn to tap and you adapt to that environment, you don't really care who really tapped you.
Okay.
Right? Because in your mindset, I said, I have to tap because I'm in a very bad situation. I always tell them, you shouldn't tap when the technique is on. You should tap a little bit earlier because you do not know how this guy will actually pull out the technique and somehow you could be hurt. And I always tell them, you got to tap a little bit earlier. And it doesn't matter who tapped you. It's when you get yourself into a bad position, you should tap.
Yeah.
And I always told my guys when in rolling is, don't fight all the time. Try to be in a bad position and try to escape from that bad position. And that's what you need to learn from jiu-jitsu. I mean, jiu-jitsu is part of it, is to being able to survive and sustain a very bad position and you survive. And one day, I mean, you can survive an armbar and then you let the armbar tighter and see if you escape. And there will be a threshold point that you have to tap and you just have to learn that. And because of the process of that, actually your mindset trained become not to think about who tapped you. You just think about, okay, am I in a bad situation? Can I survive that bad situation? If I could, let me survive it. If I couldn't, I tap.
Okay. Is that same for you guys?
Yeah, like I was saying in the last thing, yeah, I tried to put myself in very, very bad positions because it's good training.
Yeah. I think you two have a very healthy ego compared to me. For me, if somebody, I always tap and then suddenly they're tapping me, I go home and I go to and I study. What did I do wrong? What did I do?
Well, that's
wrong? And I
come but back. That's what some of you should do.
Yeah,
right?
You should
like
do.
How did they tap you? And you analyze the moves, right? Rather than the
but I, you know, I don't give it up. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe I got a wrong feeling. You guys just okay. You know, I'm okay. I come back. For me, I don't give it up. I go home. I keep thinking about it over and over and over, and I come back.
I'm not asking you to keep it up. Yeah. I'm asking you to learn from the tap.
Right. Yeah. By studying what went wrong. So what can you do in the future? I do that anyway. Right. You should do that, right? Like, what mistake did I make? Or
right. And especially when you're in a high belt, let the lower belt put you in a very bad situation. And the lower belt will tap you for sure because you let them do that. You know, of course, some lower belt will say, I tapped you. And then he feels so cocky. And the next moment, you just tap him back.
Totally, yeah.
It happens to me all the time. And I let some white belt tap me and he feels so good. I say, okay, you have it. Then I tap him 3 times in a minute. So he just like, oh, okay. Yeah. Now I understand.
Yes.
You know, that's part of the... It's part of the learning. And, you know, nowadays you got so many good guys, like purple belt. Yeah. They can fight like a black belt.
Yeah.
I got some like 20 years old guy from the States, like, and of course not this year, but like before all this happened. And, you know, you got guys from Russia, you got guys from America, and then they're just like bowing and they come in and they see you a black belt and they just go at you.
Yeah.
And sometimes even a purple belt could tap me because they are so furious and they're so strong and they're so young. And what, shall I just like shut the door and close it and not teach jiu-jitsu anymore? No. Yeah. No, I would just try to survive that and you know, and survive the technique. And you know, they in the end actually they would say, ask you, you know, you're that old. Oh, you're so small. Ah, your technique is so good. You know, you survive for so long. Yeah. And they in that way, they more respect you because they understand, jiu-jitsu can actually get me so far.
Yeah.
Right? And that's the example I try to show in the gym. Not try to beat anyone that walk into the gym.
Yeah.
Not anymore.
Yeah.
Maybe if you ask me the same question 13 years ago, you have a different answer.
Yeah.
Right? I guarantee you, 13 years ago, I won't tap with anyone, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I've got Wing Chun guy coming in, I've got Taekwondo guy coming in, I just go 100% and smash them.
Yeah.
Right? It's either I got on or I kill them.
Yeah.
but not anymore. Jiu-jitsu actually, like, as you progress, it changes your mindset, it changes the whole of the self, to embrace the art, and you understand it is the gentle way to approach the martial arts. I think that's very important to learn.
Yes.
The gentle way.
Okay. But, you know, another question is, I know both of you guys are a little older than me. How do you deal with the, you know, younger guys in jiu-jitsu?
I don't do anything special.
Okay.
I never tell people how old I am.
Yeah. You do anything special? Or
I just let them pass, my God.
Okay.
Just let them pass and then we survive. And like, I would look at the clock. Okay, 1 minute gone. And we just keep looking at the clock. Okay, 4 minutes gone. If it's still not gas out, I would just keep defending. Okay. Yeah. If they gas out, I would sweep them and tap them.
Okay, do you do things differently? I mean, both of you guys over 10 years, more than 10 years in jiu-jitsu.
Well, I try to use as little energy as possible. Okay. So I try to make an emphasis on my position, my framing, so that I can just sit there and basically rest while they're trying to do stuff. Yeah. And then when I'm ready, then I move. And then I try to go really slow. It's part of my game. I don't know if it has to do with my age or just the way I do things. I go slow, step by step.
I mean, did your game change since you started jiu-jitsu? Because as you get older, maybe there's more joint pain. Maybe some things you do in training that you go like yourself. So you
said I don't really have any joint pain.
Oh, no? Okay.
I think jiu-jitsu is good for my... I used to have serious back problems, neck problems from playing basketball, which is... But jiu-jitsu, yeah. Everything is fine. I don't wear braces on my fingers, anything.
It's a little bit different from me because I'm just not practice jiu-jitsu because I'm also like running the gym and I teach jiu-jitsu. Yeah. So I try to keep update myself to what jiu-jitsu is nowadays. You know, if they got some new techniques coming up, I would try to train and learn it and. I will try it myself until I feel comfortable. I will show it. So actually, it just keep changing. So I would say my jiu-jitsu has tried to be update with the time.
So you teach a lot of new techniques. Nowadays, you know, I go to the gym. The people say my jiu-jitsu is old school. They have the new school, right? The modern jiu-jitsu. But do you have that in your gym too as well? Like people coming in. You know, it's very funny. Somebody told me in the gym that we have a guy very good with a lapel guard. And I was like, wow, he's pretty good. And then they told me he doesn't know how to do close guard. So I was like, what? You know,
right.
A lot of people now doing all the fancy stuff, but they're losing the fundamentals, right? So I think in your gym, you also teach them fundamental stuff.
Yeah.
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 So, but do you have guys that coming in, they like to play the, you know, at my gym, you know, in the morning. Some of the maybe white belts, they've been there for a year. They know the Della Hiva, they know the Kiss of the Dragon, you know, all those fancy moves, Baron Bolo. But they don't know the arm drag from close guard.
But what they're doing is still jiu-jitsu.
It is, but I find that, you know, they should be learning the fundamentals before they learn the, you know. That's my opinion. How about you guys?
I mean, my own game is as old school as it gets. Yeah. So, and then I kind of designed my game to negate whatever new school stuff, lapel guard or Baron Bolo or, you know, leg locks. You know, my own game is designed to negate that. So, that's me personally. I think everybody, like Henry says, all that other stuff is also jiu-jitsu.
It is.
I don't know if I'm qualified to teach that. I'm qualified to counter that. So, like, if I teach, I usually try to teach things that I do regularly in my own game, which is very old school stuff.
So. Maybe have like a basic of the.
But even the basic changed. Some of the basic has changed because jiu-jitsu has come so far. And in the past, people are not being able to counter jiu-jitsu because they never done it, and now because it's more popular now and everyone know okay close guard armbar so. Even the approach to a close guard armbar nowadays is a little bit different from what I've learned from the past. So even I would say there's no old school new jiu-jitsu as such. It's just jiu-jitsu as a whole has evolved because more people are competing and it's changing because they are getting better each day and to be able to beat each other in competition, they have to come out with some a little bit more innovative stuff to overcome the past. And that's why jiu-jitsu is so interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, now another question is, you know, just going back to a previous topic, that why people quit jiu-jitsu. Have you ever had guys that tell you they quit because they think you're favoring another person over them? They don't think they're getting enough attention, so they quit. You know, like I said, in Kowloon, a lot of people do quit. That I do understand, previous people who quit, because they feel like they should have more attention. But like I said, you know, in my gym, you know, I can comment on my own gym, is Kowloon is very free. We do whatever we want to do in our thing. So you don't really get the attention as other gyms does. I think as you would agree. Yeah, I think in our gym it's more like you come in, we share. But I think in your gym, Henry, is more a structure. You're teaching them. Was there anybody in history in your gym that tells you, you know, I think you should give me more attention, that I could have been better?
No.
No. Because that happens overseas in a lot of the U.S. gyms. There's a lot of competitors that the professors, they go, they're just training this guy more. They're teaching them moves. And the other guys, they feel like, hey, man, I can also be a champion if you give me the time.
No. Well, I guess my gym is quite small and I don't have a big numbers of people showing up each night. So I never had this problem. No. I never had this problem. I have problem like guys telling me, can I like show this and show that? I will just like ignore them, right? You
okay.
you do as what I show you.
Yes.
If you don't like it, you can leave. And I keep on telling them, all you have to do is just keep coming and you will gradually pick up your game. It's just like a bit of puzzle.
Yeah.
And the more pieces you have, and you will have that puzzle. Yeah. If you just come and you want to pick this piece, you want to pick that piece. No, you got to pick all the puzzle parts to make the puzzle work.
Okay. Now, how about what kind of students do you like most?
I only like people that keep coming back.
Okay. Right. Do you like students?
Good answer.
Yeah. Good answer.
Yeah.
I mean, but let's get the real of it. Do you like students who ask you questions a lot? You know, there are some guys, you know, that, you know, maybe including myself, I always ask the professor, I see something. Now, one thing I never did, was, you know, somebody showing a technique. I think it's very disrespectful, in my opinion. I've seen people do it a lot. Somebody showing a move, and then some guy in random, they go, but on the YouTube, this guy didn't do it like this. I find that very disrespectful. You know? I never do that. But is there people that will ask you after class, you know?
Do you prefer those students
or do you prefer they just follow everything you say?
I prefer students ask questions. Yeah. I really like it. I encourage them to ask. Please ask. Especially the higher belts. Even the lower belts.
Yeah.
Because the lower belts can come up with a question that the higher belts never thought about.
Yeah.
And even so, I never thought about. You know, when they suddenly ask me a question, if I don't have an answer to it, I will actually say, okay, I'll come back to you next time.
Okay.
And luckily, I think 90%, I give them a very good answer and they say, ah, okay. Yeah. And I like that feeling. I like that feeling because I can answer the question, it means that I understand the technique. Hmm. So whatever question you ask, I can give you an answer. So, and just recently, a very high belt just come up to me and asked me a question and say, we've been trying to sort this out. And I asked some other black belts in the gym and they don't give me the right answer I like. And I was lucky that I gave him the right answer. He was so thankful.
Oh, so, that's good.
Yeah. So, you know, I guess just experience count. You know?
It does.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, when I started, I always ask question, you know, about the guard game, different guard game. And yeah, Gus is pretty much like my half sensei. Other than that, you know, I ask him a lot of things. You know, I think for the white belts who are listening, you know, or even higher belts who are listening, I still ask questions. Sometimes I ask questions, maybe so fundamental questions. For my own. Sometimes I watch videos. So fundamental, just even shrimping. Sometimes, you know, recently I have been going back to shrimping the proper way of shrimping. And there's even such a fundamental move has so many details on how you escape, right? And I do appreciate, you know, asking different people and just to, you know, perfect my technique a little bit here and there.
Yeah, it's good to ask questions.
Yeah,
I always encourage people to ask questions. It means you are thinking.
Yeah.
Right? You don't follow. I mean, you're not a copycat.
Yeah. But now is, when you have, you know, you're a black belt, who do you ask now? Is there somebody that you ask, you know, that when you have problems with technique?
Yeah.
Because there's new techniques. Now, who do you ask? Or do you just watch videos and you try to analyze?
Both.
So who do you ask? Is there somebody you can give us a name?
I mean, like, I got black belt friends that come into my gym and train, and I'll ask. Mm. I mean, like Kent from Hansel Gracie.
Okay.
I ask him a lot about footlock. I mean, he showed me a lot of the footlock. And like a few years ago, I was preparing for the world. Actually, he was my secret training partner.
Okay.
He trained with me almost 3 times a day. And we just closed the gym and we just train.
Okay.
You know, that's how you improve. Just train with everyone. I recently got an Australian black belt, just like also teaches in Kowloon, and he trained with us. And I asked him too. I mean, he's a young guy, but you know, I see him doing something different. I ask him, you know, what else could you do?
Yeah.
What else could you do?
See, you still ask questions, Chris?
Yeah. I mean, I still like to take other people's classes. And then usually they're teaching stuff that's not necessarily part of my A game. But it's very good to explore those things. So I totally ask questions in that case. And I watch a lot of videos. Usually, like, if something goes wrong, the first thing I'll do is I'll think about it. It's usually kind of obvious without having to ask, right? And then I'll try to get those solid first. And then I have a lot of questions that I want to ask people whose games I admire, like Bernardo Faria.
I love Bernardo.
I know his game a lot, right? But there's a limit to how much you can learn watching his fights and his videos and whatever. And there are some questions that I still have. But that I guess I have to save that for taking privates and stuff like that.
Yeah,
I mean, like, my half guard game, I benefit a lot from Lucas. I mean, you bring him in twice, and I'm so glad that I trained with him, and he answered me a lot of the questions. And even the half guard game now has evolved quite a bit since Lucas Nietzsche. And I try to keep adapting to that half guard game change.
Yes. I mean, you just have to constantly learn, right? Because jiu-jitsu is constantly evolving.
Yeah.
And... yeah, you know, any advice for any white belts or blue belts or even higher belts, what they should do?
As a white belt, you just have to keep coming back. And as a higher belt, you just have to
keep coming back.
What else can you do? Yeah. I mean, I never stopped training. I don't know, 16 years, I never stopped training. Okay. I still roll, I roll less now, of course, because my body cannot take as much pounding as before.
Yeah.
But I still, like, I'm in the gym, I think I'm in the gym every day, actually. Unless I have something else to do otherwise, I will go in to take care of the class, and meet my students, and train, hang out with them, and train with them. You know,
Any belt chasers in your... ever in your school?
No.
There are some always I meet. They always ask, when am I going to be a blue belt? When am I going to get promoted? Yeah, have anybody ever asked you?
No, because I keep on telling them, you will be a blue belt when you're a blue belt.
Okay.
And I think a lot of the time is because I am the father of the gym.
Yeah.
So when you come in, like, after few times you come in, you will understand the rules.
Yeah.
And you won't ask. I mean, you don't ask me. The belt will be yours as the time come. And that has been the culture in our gym. And I think that has been the culture of jiu-jitsu. I mean, you know how I get my purple belt? I think I got a purple belt from Impact Gym.
Oh.
In Impact. I was rolling with Quinton.
Okay.
And then you just take off my blue belt and just give me the purple belt. And I never expected the purple belt. And I think the purple belt was actually some other wearing it. I just like, take it off and put it on me.
You're demoted. You know? And he's promoted.
It was like that. And I just want to keep it that way because like Daniel Charles is another big influence in my jiu-jitsu life because it's just his style and I want to keep that this way.
Yes. Anybody ever ask you that you should get promoted? You know, people.
I remember one guy. I won't name. He's in our gym, and I've been training with him since he was an orange belt. And then Taki gave, because he was a junior, still. And then Taki gave him a green belt, and I trained with him a lot. I think you know who I'm talking about. He kept on asking me to give him a blue belt. I'm like, I'm not giving you a blue belt. I mean, it's not even because he doesn't deserve a blue belt. Eventually, he got a blue belt, and now, of course, he's a very high level, very very high level guy. So it's great to remember those times when he's an orange belt, you know?
because recently, maybe because I think Henry is a professor, maybe they don't talk to Taki. You know, I'm in between, right? So there's a guy who are talking to like, when do you think I'm going to get my blue belt? I said, I don't know. Whenever you're ready. I said, I'm not the guy giving up the belt.
Oh, maybe they have some discussion behind my back. I don't know, but you know, never come up to me and when am I going to get my legs level belt? And I never had this question asked.
But when you were training, did you ever think? I did. I'll admit it. When I was white, I was thinking, when am I going to be blue? I wanted to be blue. But when I got to blue, to purple, I started to mature. I didn't really care. But from white to blue, I wanted the blue.
Yeah, I only wanted the blue. I only wanted the blue.
Like the blue, I was like, okay, when am I going to get it? When am I going to get it? That was me.
When I was blue, I never wanted to get the purple because
same
because the purple when Daniel gave me the purple, I always want I almost want to just like don't give it to me.
Yeah,
you know, it's so much pressure on you when you have the purple belt.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
Yes.
And I messaged
you. Totally. Yeah. It's always a surprise.
How about white to blue? Did you want it to get
I think it was kind of a surprise for me, too.
But did you want it? Were you like going, you're like,
Not really, because I had had a break, and then I came back, and I started training regularly again. I think I was leading. I don't know what it was. Yeah, and then it was a complete surprise. So I just came back from a long time away, so it wasn't like I had any expectations, except that I just want to train. So it was a surprise.
Yeah. Actually, when I come to like bell gradings, I do have a question to ask you boys, when I was training and teaching jiu-jitsu, and when I got my my purple belt, I always thought that I'm never ready for that purple belt. I still feel that I'm a blue belt. You know, I never felt that I'm a purple belt. And when I talked to Daniel, he actually gave me a very good answers. I give you the purple belt is for you to grow into a purple belt. It's because you are not a purple belt yet. I give you a purple belt so that you can grow into it. And to me, I will always promote someone that's not quite purple belt, but he have the potential to become purple belt. I will give him the purple belt. Do you guys agree to that? Because I know actually some professors say, okay, you got to be blue belt for so long, and even when you reach purple belt, you are still a blue belt until such and such time, and okay, now you're a purple belt. And for me, I tend to give the person the belt a little bit premature so that you can grow into that belt. And what do you guys think about that?
I think that makes sense. I think this idea of having people grow. I mean, I felt that way about each of my belts. Like, I didn't feel like I was ready, but then I feel I did grow into the belt eventually. I don't know if that's what we do at Kowloon, but I think that makes sense as a psycho, you know, as a, that's reasonable.
I don't know. I hope Taki is listening to this. But I'm going to tell him. This is my opinion, okay? Yeah. So my podcast, I say whatever I want. So I think, you know, through my experience with Taki, that people he promoted, you know, obviously, I'm just putting it out there. Some people that he promoted, I think was like Henry, was premature. But I think it helped them. Because they felt the pressure. They came back so much stronger. When they were blue, they were like, oh, you know, whatever. Or when they were white, they were like, oh, whatever. And then they got promoted prematurely. They came back stronger. Because they feel like, oh, I'm wearing this belt. I have this color in their mind. They started to train harder. But there are people that he promoted late. I think he promoted them late because that style didn't work for certain. And then there are some that he promoted. I was like, okay. Obviously my opinion, I'd be like, I don't think they're ready.
Yeah, I think it can depend on the person. So I think for certain people, it really helps them a lot. Yeah. I agree.
And I think, maybe, in Henry's gym, I think also, because you're so close to your students, I think every student has a different path, right? Sometimes jiu-jitsu is like a cult. It's like a church. Every person, their growth is not just jiu-jitsu-wise. It's also their mental, right? Like, when I was white to blue, just myself, there are some guys who started maybe just a little bit later than me. They got promoted before me. And did I care? I did. Because I beat them in rolling all the time. I can beat them anytime. I had that ego when I was from white to blue. I did. And when I saw them get promoted, I trained even harder. And that, that competitiveness, just to go harder, that helped me. So maybe just somebody getting that also helped others. But I got promoted. I thought I got promoted late. Maybe I didn't. We'll have to interview Tacky. But in my opinion, I thought, like I said, from blue to purple, I didn't want the purple. But from white to blue, I was really pushing. I really wanted because I thought, hey, this guy, how the fuck did he get it? Why didn't I get it? But it gave me fire to train harder. Yeah. So I think everybody different. But I think your style, I have seen many that, they were premature. But after they got the belt, maybe the first 2 months they came back and then they just kept training. Kept drilling. They grew into the belt. But I seen some they gave, maybe Tacky gave them prematurely and then they quit. So I think it depends on the person, right? Mm.
Yeah, it depends on how you drill that mentality into that person.
Yeah.
I think that's important. It's the culture of the gym. And in my gym, I will always say a few words before I graded this person and this person. I mean, I never really have a fixed date for grading ceremony. I just like, if there's enough people turning up and I felt that I feel that he's there and I should give it to him, I will just give it to him. And before I give it to him, I will always say something about this person because I know this person like quite well.
Yeah.
So I will just give them a brief history, why he's here, how long he's here, and what makes him become what he is today.
Okay. How about character-wise? Is that important to you? Like, for some professors, I know, if this person, their skill is there, but you don't think the character is there. They don't promote them. Is character important to you? Like I said, I don't know. I never promoted. I'm not suitable to promote anybody. But I just feel sometimes maybe as a journey in jiu-jitsu, sometimes I think the character for younger, older ones, more mature, I think, they understand. But for younger ones, in my opinion, I feel the character also matter because sometimes they get a higher belt, they start getting cocky. They start thinking they're, king shit. But I think character also matters in a belt for jiu-jitsu.
I think it's not just jiu-jitsu, but as a martial artist.
Yeah.
I think it's very important. I would say attitude more than character, right?
Yeah. Have you ever not promote somebody because of the character?
Yeah. Yes. Definitely. Yeah. Actually, he left. Right? And I'm quite happy. I have no hard feeling.
Yeah.
And because I never felt that he will be, it doesn't represent the ethics of the gym.
Yeah.
So he will leave naturally because it's not part of us.
How about you guys? Even character matter?
It totally matters. I mean, almost everybody I've trained with are great, but occasionally there's like a bad apple, as we know, right?
Yeah.
And then I don't think they should get promoted.
Yeah.
And usually they leave.
Yeah, they will leave.
So, because they don't really fit into the gym, right?
Yeah.
And some professors like them because they win something for them,
But for me, I think his character is more than winning because, jiu-jitsu is more like, it's not like Muay Thai, okay? Like Muay Thai, there's a lot of Muay Thai schools. They're all good. I like most of them. But Muay Thai, a lot in Hong Kong, just my opinion, the ones I train at, is more like interest class. I go there for 1 hour. I have a sweat. Maybe I meet some friends. We go for drinks after. But jiu-jitsu is more like we're really like a brotherhood when you get close. I think in all gyms, right? Most gyms.
Most gyms.
After you roll, maybe it's the hugging, you know, the really closeness, you know, physically. And, you know, we travel together too, right? There's, you know, especially in Hong Kong, you know, there's only COPA. So I travel with people to different countries to compete. Maybe you get a little closer to them. And I think, you know, in jiu-jitsu, the character really matters. Not just, you know, if they're good, I think, okay, you know, maybe you can compete, you can win. But I think character-wise, as professors, you know, they're like a role model to them, right? And then, as
I totally agree. I think character or attitude, it matters because we all get better together. So if, well, I think it limits, if someone's an asshole, then it really limits their long-term growth because people won't want to train with them. And we rely on our training partners.
Yeah.
But so, I guess when age also counts, I think when you're younger, you tend to be more cocky. You think that I'm on top of the world. Yeah. But as time goes by and you become a little bit older, you understand other parts of the life is, they might change. You know, I hope some of them will change. I still know some asshole out there fighting, but I hope one day they will change.
Yeah. I hope they change.
I think that it's very. We all can change.
Yeah.
And I hope jiu-jitsu can change it.
Mm-hmm.
Have you? Any students have changed a big way since been in jiu-jitsu since white.
They all changed somehow. You know, they all changed to be a. I would say they all changed to be a better person and a healthier person, obviously. Right, the lifestyle changed. You know, no, even they eat, no, even their social life, they change around jiu-jitsu. Because of jiu-jitsu, they have to adapt to the time coming in the gym. You know, they all change. Even character changed, lifestyle changed, everything changed.
How about you guys?
100%.
Have you changed since started
jiu-jitsu? I've changed a lot. I think so. No, really, I think about the things that have most influenced me in my life. I would say, number one is I have a partner, right, who's like a life partner.
Yeah.
And then number two, having a son, because like when you're having a son, it's, you know, if you take it seriously, then you're like, you can only teach by example. So what kind of person do I want my son to be? And I have to be that person. And jiu-jitsu. I always think about it like that. When I started, I feel like I didn't know anything. I think I'm a much nicer, healthier, much more substantive person than I was when I started. You know, and it kind of mirrors my career path too. I started as a lawyer, an investment banker, focused on making money and, nothing wrong with making money, but it's focused on a lot of, selfish things. So I feel that, I've gone to a career path now, which is more about making, you know, art. I'm trying to make art. And I think that jiu-jitsu kind of mirrors that. Jiu-jitsu is, it's like truth, and then it's also love. Oh. Every time you go on the mat, it's like truth. Obviously, people are going to whip your ass occasionally. And love, like we're doing this together. You know, it's not about my status versus your status. Belts don't matter when you're rolling, right? Yeah. It's like we're really sharing this thing together. Yeah. And I think that's influenced me a lot. I think I'm a much nicer person. Yeah. You didn't know me before, right? But I think I'm a much nicer person than I was when I started.
How about you, Henry? How have you changed since the beginning to now?
Well, I think as a martial artist, I haven't changed a lot. I mean, I've been doing it since I was young.
Yeah.
So I guess it just come natural to me. And I only found that jiu-jitsu really changed my way of understanding martial arts. And that helped me to come back and do my karate better.
Okay. How about personal life? Has it changed your personal life? Like how Gus, he said he became nicer. Has it changed your personal life?
He's been doing martial arts for before jiu-jitsu. So the question is, how has martial arts changed your life, I guess?
Yeah, I guess martial arts changes my life. It's more of the discipline side of it. You know, I become a very dedicated person to the arts. And my whole life actually built around the martial art that I do. So even when my first met him as a girlfriend, she understands what I'm doing, and actually she has to adapt to my...
Has she ever trained?
No.
No? She didn't want
to? She hated it.
Oh, okay.
She hated it till to date.
Oh.
Yeah. And I don't know why we are together, but by Monday, we are together 29 years.
Wow. Oh, wow.
Yeah,
wow.
We got married 29 years. And
wow. Congrats.
Yeah.
Congrats.
And it's just amazing, you know. It's just amazing. So martial art changes my whole personal life, because my life built around that art. And people around me has to adapt to that. And if you don't shoot into my lifestyle, you cannot be part of it.
Yeah. Well, just one last question before we wrap up, just for Professor Henry. I know you have two kids, one daughter and one son. Do they both train jiu-jitsu?
They used to start the jiu-jitsu with me. Okay. But now, because of my son, it turns to be a more musician than a martial artist. So he liked to play music more, so he spent a lot more time doing music now.
Okay.
And my daughter just recently started to do yoga.
Okay.
So I think to them, jiu-jitsu is always in their blood. Yeah. And therefore, they will still come back, and we hug each other and we play each other. Yeah. We even do jiu-jitsu inside our house on our bed.
Okay. So now, one question. I know a lot of local people, they say they would never let the girlfriend or daughter train jiu-jitsu. Do you have a problem with your daughter training jiu-jitsu?
No, I don't know. I don't know how to answer you that question, because my daughter, since she was two, she has been like doing jiu-jitsu in the gym.
Okay.
My daughter trains.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know people felt that way.
Yeah, some people. I think
girls should train jiu-jitsu.
I mean, like, you know, if somebody, they have a girlfriend, they said they would never let the girlfriend train jiu-jitsu.
Wow, weird.
Because they don't want other guys touching them. But, yeah, you know, but I don't have a problem with
that's
it.
Weak.
I know, that's very weak.
Yeah. But that's not...
I've never heard of that.
Yeah.
But it's not up to that guy choice. It's the girlfriend's choice. If she feel good and she like it that way, and so be it, you know?
Yeah.
You either you take it or you leave her, right? How can you say, I dislike you doing jiu-jitsu?
That's,
the
50s, right?
Yeah. That's really lame. Yeah.
because I heard some guys that said,
maybe.
Yeah, but you know, I never had that problem. I think, you know, maybe the local Hong Kong, maybe. You know, they have this, I don't know, this culture. They don't want other people touching their girlfriend.
Yeah.
Rather than maybe, you know, we study overseas, we came from overseas, we have a different feeling.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I like I said, I never had that feeling. Whoever you know.
I think you just have to go to a healthy gym and, you know,
yeah.
If the gym is healthy, the environment is healthy, actually, you shouldn't think that way.
Yeah.
I think if somehow you think that way, it must be something wrong with the gym.
It is. You know, recently, last one, and then we're going to wrap up. But yes, but recently.
You cannot stop talking.
I know. I like to talk. But in the morning, there was a white belt just recently I'm training with. So, you know, we have a female member in the morning. So I said, oh, you two roll. And then he said, I can't. I promised my wife I won't roll with a girl. I was like, what? I find it lame.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, when you're rolling, I never really think about if they're male or female. Come on. Yeah. I play a deep half guard. My head is really beside the crotch. Yeah. I never think about it.
Yeah, never.
Yeah.
Even my wife, my wife seeing me doing some private with a lady. And, and she totally understand what we're doing. She understand the art, and that's it. It is. I mean, you either take it or you leave it.
Yeah, totally. So agree. For all the listeners out there, you know, girls or guys, you know, just train, right? Just try.
Just get it started. Enjoy the journey. It's amazing.
Yes. Well, thank you, guys. Thank you, Gus.
And thank you,
Professor Henry.
Thank you
for coming in. And guys, just keep listening, and see you next time.
Awesome.